Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. And today is an extra length edition because I interviewed Diogasen Ghosthorse for about his book and about the Akantu Institute, which he recently started. And there's information about that. The links are in the email and on the website. And I want to give a little intro about the book and about him. The book was first published in 2011. We met, I don't know, like 2009 or 2010. And I asked him if he knew of any native poets because I was hosting a poetry reading at the time. And he raised his hand, so I invited him to read at one of the library readings that I hosted. And I don't think he actually read poetry. He read from another book that he has an essay in called Soul Companions. And it was awesome. I was so fascinated by what he had to say when I first heard him that I didn't really care if he read poetry. I just wanted to hear him speak. Because he, coming from the Lakota peoples and the native consciousness, what gets said really makes me, and I will bet you, have to stop and think, because I've thought about this for years as I've gotten to know Diogasen and we've become friends, that a lot of what he's doing is he kind of translates some native ways of thinking into English. And part of the issue is that like 30%, I think he said 30% of the Lakota language, and probably with most other indigenous languages, much of it cannot be translated into English. So there are, whatever that you call them, ideas, feelings, information, ways of seeing, ways of behaving, concepts, whatever it is you want to call it. There are things that maybe you as a human being have felt or experienced, but you've never really thought about it or been able to word it because the English language has no way to do that. So that's part of what I find extremely fascinating. And I typically have to, like while doing some editing for the interview, I listened over and over and over again, and I could keep listening because stuff makes me stop and think. So the book is Children of the Sun, Prosatry Unplugged. There's some beautiful photographs by Jadina Lillian. In the original book, they were black and white. But there's four color photos in the special limited edition, and the cover and the back cover are also color photos and artwork. The reason we did this is because after so many years, for some reason when they were first printed, I had 30 extra covers that the printer gave me. There were just extra covers laying around, and when I did inventory at the end of the year, I was like, hey, let's do a limited edition. We're going to reprint this and raise some money to help with the Akantu Institute, which he'll explain in depth. And one thing you have to be aware of while listening to him speak is that typical of Native peoples is non-linear conversation, and there is not as much direct question and answer and the journalistic who, what, when, where, why, and how type of thing at all. So it meanders and goes in different directions, but if you pay attention and listen, you'll hear some neat stuff. Much of the language is relational. Everything, as he explains, everything is in relation. So there's no hierarchy. There's no better than. I think there's no word for compare in the Lakota language. And over the years, it's amazing how many times he said there's no word for exclusion. There's no word for domination. There's no word for love, which made me stop and think. But he translates that as something like, you are my skin, which is just so beautiful. So it's a whole, like I said, a whole different perspective than you may be used to. There's only about 25 or so copies available. So if you do want one, originally it was $15. It's a small book, but there's lots in it, 48 pages. But the reason we're charging double is as a fundraiser. to help raise money for the recently started Akantu Institute. And in the interview, you will hear what Akantu means, what it signifies, and it takes a while to explain. It's not a look it up in the dictionary and here's your definition, put your quarter in your machine, here's your Coca-Cola, stick your card in the thing, here's your $20. It's not that kind of answer. If you want to get the book, email me. I would accept checks, but you have to let me know before you mail it in case the online orders or do something to the limited amount. So it would help to know ahead of time. And as I have come to learn, even though English is the most spoken language around the world, right now, and in this land, this country, what people call United States of America, what the native peoples call Turtle Island, that people don't stop to realize we are speaking foreign language, and not even just a foreign language. In a sense, it's a mutt of foreign languages, as a lot of it, I think 60% is Roman, and you've got Anglo-Saxon, there's Germanic. I'm not a total linguist, but from etymology, I often see, you know, Latin, Roman, Greek, and other stuff, and other languages. So, again, a different perspective. And there is a bio about Teocasin on my webpage, the webpage about the book. So I'm not going to say too much. I want to rather give an anecdote, but along with being a writer, he's a master musician, plays the tradition of the red cedar flute, and he's given talks around the world. He was nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize, and he's in his 30th year hosting First Voices Radio, which I'm a devotee of listening to for like 11 or 12 years. It's every Sunday now from 7 to 8 p.m., and it's also in the archives, so you can catch it whenever. So my anecdote is that when I first started listening to the First Voices radio show, also there's the First Voices radio at the Facebook page, and then there's First Voices Indigenous Radio.org for the website. When I first started listening, and this is an example of kind of the Euro-Western mind compared to the native, that, you know, he would mention Mother Earth, and fascinating talk about that, and being more attuned and more connected and more caring for caregiving, not caretaking. So then I listened again, and he said Mother Earth again, and then after about the fifth show, I heard him say Mother Earth again, and I, in my rational mind, I was like, okay, I got it. Why is he's gonna keep saying that? So I listened again, and I was like, oh man, he keeps saying that. But then I realized suddenly, I'm like, wait a second, I don't got it at all. I don't got it at all, because the more I hear, about the talk about, and the more I started to think about it, it's actually something I'm never gonna get, in the sense that just stop and think of how big Mother Earth is, how many people get fed. Think about your own little backyard where there's ants and birds and trees and leaves, and how busy that keeps you all year. Now magnify that to, what is it, like 8 billion people, to millions of years, to all kinds of sciencey terms that I don't know about how things work, but it's not really science. It's Mother Earth is a living being. And so I realized, okay, there's a whole different way to be and to feel and to think. And so I've tried to attune more of my energies, especially during these challenging times of the climate, with the earth and feeling what she's feeling, or listening, just stepping outside and listening, or being inside and thinking of the trees and listening, and trying to, you know, pick up messages and signals. I think you know, people tend to romanticize Native and Indigenous people, but you can listen, find your own way with whatever the earth rhythms are. And along with the mention of Mother Earth, it again, it's in something he wrote that I think it, if I remember correctly, it was, we are not protecting Mother Earth. We are Mother Earth in defense of herself. So it's to think of Mother Earth as some object or some being outside of oneself is different than the native perspective, because we are physically made of earth energies. It's in our bone, it's in our bones, in our flesh. So we are part of the earth, and the earth is part of us. So it's not an objectified out something outside you being or thing. And another way I think about it is that every day, if you're living with someone you're close to, or you speak with someone on the phone every day, you say good morning, how are you, I love you, how you doing, what are you going to do today? So what about that with Mother Earth? And that's the kind of things I've learned from listening to Native peoples, that we can be proactive and participate, and that requires, I don't know, a different way of being, and pausing and thinking. And that everything, when you know, when you stop and think about whether you're using a cotton Q-tip or the plastic that the trash pails in your car, or the oil you cook with, or the mint tea, or the medicine you take, it's all coming from Mother Earth. And obviously there's some human effort to help bring it, but the spirit of it and the energy of it is all intertwined. And I'll ask you to listen carefully, with an open heart, with an open mind. And the book starts actually with a quote. You wouldn't expect it, but a quote from Ludwig Wittgenstein. And it's a great quote for realizing why. You ever have people that you tell them something and they just don't get it? Well, here's one of the reasons. We must begin with the misrepresentation and transform it into what is true. That is, we must uncover the source of the misrepresentation. Otherwise, hearing what is true won't help us. The truth cannot penetrate when something is taking its place. The truth cannot penetrate when something is taking its place. So you got to clean the deck, clear the slate, sweep the temple, and have a listen. Thank you for listening.
All right, then say in your book, you mentioned the title, Children of the Sun. You mentioned the title a bunch of times, so if you could let people know what the significance is of Children of the Sun.
Children of the Sun is people, in this case, the Lakota, where I come from in the Black Hills or graphical center of North America, which is in Washington, South Dakota. Sun is the primary strongest element there. You know, we have the land, the water, the air, but the sun is constantly, no matter what day it is, it seems it comes through. But Children of the Sun refers to we have been sun dancing before religion was ever thought of, before dogma, before any religion. Been there, and as we sun danced, we understood the cosmos and the cosmos vision that we had, that we are all children of the sun, that Ate, the sun, the we, the father, the we, the sun. And once we are able to dance in that, I don't know, formation that people talk about, things are in order because of the natural law. And the Children of the Sun is basically about, I, as a sun dancer, have understood how small, how humble I am because of that sun. And I look to see others who are also children. And although we don't act like we are, children are not as immature as we think. It's when we become adults that we begin to, it's almost where you get very senile or away from the mature, the spiritual image, the spiritual maturity that we are when we are children, because we're pure, we're innocent, without guilt, without programming, without concept, and directly from the sun. And so we dance that as sun dancers, children of the sun. And so that's my explanation for that. I think it would make sense to people to really read the book, because the Children of the Sun is where we get the nourishment,
We get light, we get color, we get warmth, we get everything, even cold.
Things move because of the sun.
On the earth, with the earth. Long before we ever came along and after we're gone as a species, even though we try to get to another planet, the sun will still be there. Regardless where we move to, the sun will always be there because our DNA is made up of the sun. So we can't just be going to other interplanetary places because we dissipate without that original DNA sun. So I think that's a good explanation for the title of the book, Children of the Sun.
Yeah, that adds a lot because I didn't know all that. I mean, I know some of that, but I didn't know all of that, so that adds a lot. Did you say, is the sun in Lakota we? W-I? Is that the we?
Yeah, we.
Okay, yeah, just so people know, it's not the W-E of English.
Yeah, we. And then Ate is father, so.
Males, as far as I know, we refer to the son as Ate, our father. The father and I, you know, our father who art in heaven, not that. Kind of a stolen phrase there. Indigenous peoples all over have called the son somewhat of that father or Ate. And the father and then the moon is mother.
Yeah, it's like sun literally in the sky rather than, you know, generic something in heaven.
Yeah.
Neat. And then, what about the Akantu Institute that you recently started? That is cool. There's so much on the website. You talk about contextualizing for troubled times. Somebody I know mentioned that they were, these are such tough times. So I sent them the quote about that you have there about, have to be strong mind, strong spirit nowadays.
Yeah, the contextualizing language, the wisdom for troubled times is that seeing through that, because we have been through it as, at least in our history as Native people, we've been through this before.
And panic is to give those ancestors up, those roots that got us this far. And I see a lot of people panicking because they've forgotten their roots and they immediately go into the head, the intellectualism of fear or not, or reason not to, to be natural, to fight against nature, the virus, everything. So we make it the enemy, and then, but we don't have the language even to do that. We go into some psychological, parade, trendy. Everything gets traumatic, and
yet we still make that species specific, and so. We make our species, a human species, as if everything is supposed to adjust to us as a species.
And yet, when I think about how Native people sustain, which is getting very thin and small now, our ability to live with the earth is because we always remembered and respected the elders. And that's just not humans. And that language is disappearing in among Native peoples, too.
Well, we know that it won't go away. There'll be a very few that remember that and are able to convey that, not just in language, but in feeling and intuition. Because it's intuition that breaks, isolation, breaks separation, breaks intuition. Yeah, intuition breaks the isolation that we are taught to live in. And because if you're isolated, then you are only thinking of self. So we become very anthropocentric. And we forget about intuition, which is non-anthropocentric. You can't even, it's like water. It's everywhere. It's like gravity. And that's intuition. But where can we find the language in this language that I'm speaking? English or the other languages that are so noun-filled. Where can we speak a language where you can speak all day without saying a single noun? You know, those are indigenous languages. And that knowledge, that interest, the information is there. We're looking for instruction of how to use those languages in this language of rational thinking
in the languages that can't even give secrets away, but that it's so exposed, so complex, that even a simple noun-filled concepts cannot even begin to reinterpret it, break it down, or delineate any meaning. So, you know, it's very poor, and a friend of mine called it a low-contextualizing language. It hadn't evolved past objectifying and thingifying and nonification of everything. And so that just kind of makes our thinking more restrictive and less more, you know, involved in the universe, more understanding things differently rather than in the measuring or the weighing or the, you know, cost or, you know, those numerical values that you find language in this case where thinking math is the language, and yet the math can't even go past the scientific method of understanding life, because it's still coming from the subjective application of it. So when you're speaking and understanding things in intuition, that can't be measured, and therefore science and religion and, you know, all those dogmas can't ever understand. Right, there's no beginning and end in intuition. And so this is how we will be coming around soon, and very few human beings will understand that. It's going to take the human being, not just a human, because we're all human, but there's a human being aspect in all of us, but that doesn't mean that all of us will get it. Maybe that energy has been so dissipated in the many, many humans that are around here that we don't understand. So I think the key to understanding it is understanding to know that energy has no age. There's no such thing as young and old. And yet we speak a language of youth and elder, beginning and ending, living and dying. And we're missing everything in between. So when we finish this lifetime, we feel like we missed something. We live, we were born, we tried to live, but we were afraid to die. So something is missing there, and that's where I'm thinking a lot of people I hear are afraid to die because they don't know how to live yet. Physically, yes, but mentally, yes, but spiritually, there's something missing when you have to have a word for spirit.
I'll leave it right there.
Yeah, that's a lot. The couple of things you said, the thing about the panic made me think, I don't know if it's from listening to you and your radio show or other Native people, but I know when you said in the Lakota language, like, there's no words for solution or goal, that made me think about that. And so, like, one of the ways I think about that now is if something comes up that's like immediately, oh, that's a problem, instead of jumping into that reaction mode, I try to think like a plant or something growing, like wait a second, that it doesn't just have the answer right away. It like takes time to find out which way to go. It's like, you know, when I see a plant growing out the side, you know, it's dormant for a while, and all of a sudden there's this little bud shooting out of the side of the branch, and I'm like, wow, it had to figure out how to do that.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, that's just like my not trying to not think about it too much, or not trying not to come up with an answer right away, but to try to feel my way through things that at first seem like, oh, I could panic now. But if I slow myself down and think of how the plants or the earth might respond, it changes my response.
Yeah, and how you receive, you're receptive to that. There's a word, I'd say, ohutka, which means like root. So, rooted thinking, and there's another one, nakiksapa, which means something like you're sensitive to
See, this is, these are the words that I don't like using. Spiritually sensitive to energy.
Hmm. Okay.
And so this is your intuition. And so why don't we put ohutka in it?
Then we
understand that consciousness is rooted.
And that's the imagination, because the imagination has to start somewhere. It just doesn't come from anywhere. But it starts somewhere to go anywhere. In other words, Elder
Charmaine Whiteface would say that your thoughts just don't stay in your head. That
they go onward, and this is how the old ones spoke to each other, is the ESP, I guess, the telepathic thoughts, and that's how they spoke. And therefore, you didn't have to use verbal language all the time. It was necessary to live in this realm, but knowing and understanding the other dimensions made it more clearer that we're much more than just these minds or these heads or even this heart. And when I think about the word akantu, which was the original question, akantu defines what that plant is that you described there, that it knows where, but it does it by intuition, intelligence. And once we are, the akantu, of course, is the being. So a plant could be the being from the ancient future now. So a plant can be dormant for 34,000 years. Then all of a sudden, boom. Okay, now things are conditional that I can come forth again. And, you know, this is science is proving things, but yet we say trust in science and that's not what it is. It's not trusting in science, because science is always changing. It's, you remove the trust from science, you know, you understand it just as something that's controllable.
But when you say Akantu is like earth man, earth being, earth, you know, understanding the earth. And when we get away from understanding the earth, okay, that's when all this other solution to a problem. And it's just simply that we forgot to understand Earth, or even more, even further thinking that the Earth already understands us. We forgot to recognize that and, you know, be part of the natural law process rather than trying to solve why we're lost. And I think that's where the emptiness, the hollow phrasing, as my friend Delaney would talk about, the hollow phrasing. We come up with jargon to fill space, and because we base it on the standard intellectualizing of the West, and everything else, you know, doesn't count, because this is the way we refine how to kill better. We refine how to be more efficient. We refine religion and science and government, technology, because that's how we are. And everybody else, you know, second place or whatever. But Akantu brings everything to, you know, of relationship, not equality. This is not a measurement of relationship. You can't measure relationship. Well, psychologically, you probably could, I don't know. But when you measure a relationship, it just deadens it. Like you have to take it apart and say, it's working or it's not working, but when you find relationship in nature, everything needs everything else, you know? And everything else asks permission of everything else. And that is so complex to understand in this baby language. So just understanding the language in a different mentality would help something. You could learn the language verbally and look at a dictionary and learn it, but it's such that it says how you learned it takes the feeling out of it. So the energy is not there. It becomes a subject and has no life to it.
So, yeah, so Okantu is essentially that, the being from the ancient future now, but for better balance is Earth human, Earth man, Earth woman, whatever. So, yeah, that's Okantu.
Yeah, I like that. I like the past. Just makes me think about the, a lot of times now, I think about the past, present, future all at once.
Yeah.
You know, it's rather than getting stuck in the be here now box, which is like just right in the moment. But wait a second, you know, there's roots and there's a future, and it's, but it's all happening now. So it's definitely a shift of awareness.
Yeah. Kind of like, that, I don't know, something like,
the future is listening.
Like the tree already knows you're there. You know, when you go outside, the tree notices you too.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just a one way. We go out there, wow, tree, there for us. I think that phrase in the Bible, that there's, you know, basically that we're supposed to own the earth or whatever is put there for us. That's the biggest lie ever told.
That's where it went wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that dominion over the earth, that's like the key line there.
Mm-hmm.
Dominion over the earth, something like that.
Yeah, and all the living creatures, the whatever.
Yeah.
And that's the lie, the first lie that was given. You know, everything seems to make sense until that.
Yeah. Or even in the beginning, I guess would be that introduction of time.
In the beginning.
But defined by who?
What people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's another lie. So it starts off with lie after lie, and lies sound better, where you're just so confused later on that you don't know, even with the Ten Commandments, you don't even know what are they saying. Don't steal, don't covet, all that stuff, but that's what's happened here. All the lands have been stolen, you know, we've taken everything from those people who had, and now we're not making anything out of the things that we stole from them. You know, we become selfish, which is part of, I guess, the commandments not to be. You know, so, you know, every one of those commandments have been broken, the treaties with their invention of the Creator. So that contract is broken. And one thing that we know as Native people, traditional way back when, is that that's we can't break that contract. We can't break that
treaty
with nature. That's nature's law.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we follow that, well, you know, we'll be all right. But I don't know about the other humans who are breaking their own laws with their own creator that they invented. How they're going to survive that whole virtual reality.
Yeah, that's cool. There's a lot in the book, The Children of the Sun. It's as you say, it's prosatry, because it's a mix of poetry and prose, and you know, as amazingly in the English, you convey quite well some of the feelings of what you just expressed. About the Okantu Institute. So it's a cool book, and there's even some line about, with your nieces driving along and you're going to make it okay, that kind of affirmation kind of feeling. I like the feeling that comes from it, because it's like driving, you're like driving somewhere and it's like there's challenges, but there's that feeling that keeps you rolling.
Yeah, as they consume acid called Coca-Cola.
Oh my gosh.
And they eat foreign food called beef, you know? Because they're caught up into the now, and then they realize later, after they become mothers or whatever, that they have been eating the wrong, because they've been listening to the outer world and not the inner world, metaphorically. I think of those two nieces now, they're mothers, right? And
mm-hmm.
Their lives have totally changed, and they eat, because of the children, they eat more properly, I guess.
So just the land.
I mean, what keeps them away from the land is technical toys, you know, everything, because they don't realize they were born into cell phones, they were born into all this technology that they think is normal.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone older like me comes along and tells them, well, there was no phones, there was no, you know, they're like,
whoa, what world did you land on? So
yeah.
And, you know, that's why there's 70% Native people now are living off the reservation, you know, and the language is so small now.
Mm.
What, 3,000 speakers on each reservation?
Mm.
About 30,000. So, and, you know, where are they going? Where have the majority of Natives gone? They're going to cities to make it. They become Hollywood. They become into the popular, trendy culture, supposedly. They accept things like BIPOC. Like, everything is out of order there. Like, wait a minute. Black, indigenous, and people of color. Well, who are the people of color?
Mm-hmm.
Why are they black before the indigenous? You know?
Yeah.
And all this stuff goes on. So, my friend Tinker and I talk about this a lot. And my friend Melanie, we talk about this. Well, we've all been in that world where we have to learn this language, but also the reasoning and logic of it. Well, Robin Wall is that same thing. And she's more spirited in that way, in her way, where she was from. So this is the time of the interpreter, the time of the messenger, where those of us who negotiated, walking between two worlds, but, you know, like my elder Virgil Kilstrait said, I'm only one Lakota living in one world. And that's just not the Lakota world. Because everybody else said, well, you're living in two worlds. And he said, no, I'm one Lakota living in one world. And that's the world inclusively. And that's the whole Nidakwe Oyasi behind it, not just being, you know, I'm living as a Lakota in a Lakota world. That kind of is, but it's not. So I think part of, you know, even having to be a negotiator and walk between worlds, so to speak, and communicate feeling into words that don't feel is the worst feeling, because it's frustrating not to get the energy into a word that has no energy except for measurement. You know, it can only take so much. So we need to control whatever that spirit is and domesticate it so that we can continue to control the population of civilizations around the world, so we can go on and have our little toys and have wars and, you know, parties and all that, because
they've lost connection. So I wonder about the 70% of Native people now.
Every generation, they're losing connection. They're losing relationship.
Mm.
And the language is being lost, and we're Americans. Become Americans now. So you see this. You know, either you've gone too far in it and become the PhD, lost everything, or you grew up in it and became the PhD. Now you're struggling to be Native. You can have say I'm Native, but never lived it. And those who are living it and still have the experience of it, they are, you know, often not listened to and usually not referred to, because it's about the now, the trendy indigenous person who grew up in the city, who's being a BIPOC, you know, a person of color. And so this is what I don't get, the irony of black, indigenous, and people of color. And as you know, I always say people of culture.
Mm-hmm.
And indigenous peoples are that, if they know who they are. So the BIPOC is another in, you know, it's like decolonized.
Mm.
And these are all trendy words to use because they've been given to us. So colonization comes along and we don't even know it is. And I think that the younger folks talk pretty and nice and very Western and dress up, but feel is not there. It's more, you know, we're kowtowing to the Western thinking. There's feeling of leaving. That's energy. We're not understanding it properly anymore. And ceremonies are performances now. You know, they're not living what you're supposed to be
ceremony is about. So there's a lot of, you know, grandstanding or whatever you call it, performing Native people for to change the world, because we have to change the world because we are indigenous. And that's assuming that we've become also the messianic people. We're going to give you prophecy, we're going to tell you how it's going to be. And that's not what it is. It's identifying where you're at now, because we can only do what we can do now, not back there or in the future. It's what we can do now. And it's, are we going to vote? I don't think so. Are we going to do a resolution? Are we going to boycott? I don't think so. Because Mother Earth is not boycotting us. Mother Earth is not saying, go vote for me. You know, Mother Earth's not performing like a human being. We're not living like we're beings of the earth. That's just very, turn anybody into a cynic such as me.
But yeah, there's a lot to be said. You know, there's a lot to the dominant culture is so powerful, and you know, like you're kind of allude to. I grew up in, you know, and I enjoy entertainment and theatrics, but that's become like the packaging for everything. The more I see it, the more I kind of, you know, I do some of it, but I try to avoid just entertainment for entertainment's sake, because that's everything becomes like, you know, ta-da, here's the package, and thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah, that's so true. I know some people who are more non-native and kind of fessed up to me that, you know, it's not what it's cut out to be. It's like, this is what you do, but it's not me, and it's empty, and I'm feeling there's something else.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we keep going through the motions? Because that's the system, and that's the system. It feeds you to keep your body alive, but it doesn't feed your spirit. The mystery is missing from it. And so they fessed up to me, yeah, there's something wrong. I can go out, have a PhD, become CEO or director of an organization and teach or whatever, but there's something missing. And there's no depth to it. I did all the correct things, I don't feel it, you know? And that's what they're at right now, you know? And they're saying, well, it could be midlife crisis, but then that's, everything just becomes a trauma or the next trend, mental, you know, whatever it is, psychological thing. And yeah, it's good for what it is there in the system, but it doesn't work over here with nature. And it's just, you know, the knowledge and information, wow, you can't do anything with it. Really, it's not like me. It's not what I know. I don't like that. I don't like being, well, Dilkson knows this and, you know, he's got so much information, that's cool. But when I ask people, well, are you hiring me? Are you going to ask me to speak? And if you pay me, what are you going to pay me for? Well, what you know and your wisdom and wait, no. I don't want any of those. Don't give me, I mean, try not to say those for me. You want me to speak because of what I think, what I'm thinking, not what I know or how much information I have. Because thinking is the act, the action of that energy.
Mm-hmm.
If we're thinking in this way, not just from the head, then the feeling is thinking. The feeling thinks, I can say it that way. Where it comes, people say passionate, compassionate, or whatever. You know, so much passion in what he says. He inspires all of us. No, I'm not going to go there with that. Then there's nothing to work, because it won't work in your system of mechanics, you know, the low contextual language. You know, no, how do you say it? Expression. There's no exalted expression. And so, you know, yippee, hooray, yahoo is not exalted expression. You know, screaming out, you scored a soccer goal. You know, that's not, that's just, no. It's
something else that's here. If you're always in expression of energy, everything else seems like mind junk.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And there's not a word for it in English.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, while you were talking before about some of the people you mentioned, what they're going through, for some reason that song New York, New York came into mind. There's that line, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere, or something like that.
Uh-oh.
And I don't think about it. It just crossed my mind, like, yeah, that's some of the programming is like, if you can make it in this big place, then you can make it anywhere. But meanwhile, like you say in the beginning of First Voices Radio, like, it's the land of the Lenape. So, like, people are trying to make it somewhere and then take that somewhere else. Instead of, like, what about just being where you are and finding out, you know, what the land is saying?
Yeah, I mean, this expression of being here now, I just so, you know, everything's cliche. We've come into a language of cliche and repeat and rinse and what's left of, there's any tea left of the tea leaves type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's, everything is bland. Look, everybody's trying to revive something, not based on Earth, but based on, you know, imagination of the human being. Like, what did we create? What did the human create? Nothing. We didn't create anything. This is how much we are sold on ourselves. That we created something. Like, wait, what did we create? Think about it. What did we create?
That's a good question. That's going to be my Zen cone for a while there.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, it is. It's like, wait a second. I mean, the first things that come to mind are like technological things and building machines and stuff, but whatever, like on a deeper level, there's so much. Yeah, we're making things, we're doing this, we're doing that, but like, what does that add to the living and the lifestyle, you know, the eating mm-hmm. and drinking clean water, like, what is all that making add to? Not much.
Yeah.
So, wow. Well, I think that's a good place. Not much to say after what did we create, except that, yeah, your little book, Children of the Sun, it there's a lot in there. I think it was first published 2010, and I was rereading it a bunch of times when we reprinted it, and it's still it's just a lot. It's very simple, but there's a lot to it. So,
yeah,
I hope people check that out, and plus take a look at the Akantu Institute, and I'll have all that information on the website.
Yeah, and Akantu, AKANTUInstitute.org, right?
All right.
Yeah,
thanks so much, Tioka Sin. Appreciate you sharing your thinking.
Yeah, there we go.
All right.
Thanks, Monk.
All right.
All right.
Be well.
See you.